you've been lied to about this. Our founding fathers were not old, contrary to our current government. Every time I ask students to describe the founding fathers in three words, I hear old white men. But on July 4th, 1776, James Monroe was 18 years old. Aaron Burr was 20. John Marshall was 20. Alexander Hamilton was only 21 years old. Betsy Ross was 24. James Madison was 25. Thomas Jefferson was only 33 on July 4th, 1776. Meanwhile, the other day I'm watching the State of the Union and I feel like I am watching a live simulcast of the world's most expensive nursing home. If you are a teenager or a college student or a young adult and you want to make a difference, stop waiting for permission for leadership from the people who refuse to leave office and have been in Washington, D.C. longer than twice the time we've been alive, who can't remember their own name, or who were born before the invention of the microwave oven.
Yeah. My immediate thought was, I'm old enough to be the father of some of our founding fathers. Oh, goodness. Oh, goodness gracious. Clint's getting old, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, breaks my heart. But honestly, though, I think it's a really inspiring message, one that tries to motivate young people that some of the most heroic, legendary figures in world history were, in fact, your age or much younger. So stop making excuses. Stop allowing for the octogenarians to run this Titanic. It's not working out so well. But the more interesting aspect that, or the more interesting thought that I had after hearing that video was that what I notice is almost all of our revolutionaries in this country are, in fact, Marxists. they're hard left. You see it over all across the nation at college campuses over the past few weeks. And it does not portend good things for the future that the young people that may believe in the Constitution or human liberty or freedom or any of the things that I would espouse or value, they aren't really on the forefront very much. But what you do see is hordes of really overtly Marxist college students that, while I may agree with some of their messaging when it comes to the war in Gaza, it is very disconcerting that their answer ultimately is essentially communism. And that is not good news, ladies and gentlemen. So if you're a young person that listens to me, and I'm sure there's thousands of you, please get involved. Please. We need you. We are just dramatically outnumbered. I'm doing everything I can, okay? I can't do everything. You're not going to, you can't wait for us old heads to fix everything for you. We're going to need some of you young folks to actually do some of this hard work to remedy what ails, and boy, does a lot ail us. So, please. I'm begging you.
Welcome to Liberty Lockdown. Please scan your barcode. Your liberty ain't gone, but yeah, it's on hold. Where did it come from and where did it...
So when it comes to the tech billionaire, like I've already said, I think he's a social media knob with no social conscience. He has absolutely no social conscience. Someone like that should be in jail and the key be thrown away. That bloke should not have a right to be out there on his own ideology platform and creating hatred, showing all this stuff out there to our kids and doing all the rest. I'm very interested to watch what the US is going to do with TikTok and how far that they can do with trying to get rid of that platform as well. So I think we're all watching on the United States at the moment to see what they're doing. But seriously, if we can move, and if that means in the next sitting that we can shut him down from doing...
If that means we can shut him down from doing this... I go British whenever I try to do an Australian accent. Yeah, the tyrants are... very bold, and they haven't really stopped ever since 2020 and the censorship, just full court press that happened during that era hasn't really stopped it. I think it has diminished ever so slightly, but man, oh man, these people are totally unhinged. What I love about it is that they constantly talk about the hateful rhetoric of Elon Musk and his ideological platform. Who sounds more hateful? Does Elon Musk, the guy who kind of like laughs at everything and jovially gets along with seemingly everybody, or the lady who's calling for him to be imprisoned because he won't censor the things that she demands? Who's the ideologue? Who's the hateful, tyrant? It couldn't be more obvious who. And I'm increasingly nervous, though, that these people are really running the world at this point. I mean, there's... Canadian leadership is pushing these types of laws. The UK totally lost. I mean, you have hate speech laws and everything else. Now you have GOP governors in the United States of America passing anti-Semitism laws and all sorts of hate speech laws for their preferred, you know, identitarian worldview. It's not stopping. It's not stopping, and people aren't really putting their feet in the ground, largely because I don't think most people value free speech. And this is an epiphany I've had over the past few years, but it became really stark over the past few months, is that the GOP does not believe in free speech either. And I know many of you are listening right now going, yeah, we know, Clint. Late to the party. Which, by the way, when people respond to me, when I post things on X and people respond to me going, oh, you just figured that out, I block you. I just want you to know that. So, fair warning, when you say that, I block you. Oftentimes, these are things that I've already realized years ago, probably before some of you were even born, but I'm still repeating them because the message is important. So when you say that, it just makes you sound like a condescending asshole. What I realized over the past few months is that people don't enjoy having their ideological opponents have a microphone. They don't like to let them speak. This has always bewildered me because I am the type of person that very much enjoys a battle of ideas. In fact, I just debated Mark Pellegrino on the open borders issue on Twitter Spaces with Josie on Friday. You guys can listen to that if you want, but that's what I enjoy. I think that like that's the healthiest way for us to actually, you know, battle out our ideas with one another and try and change minds. I mean, the alternative is force. So it's like I've always believed that if we're going to progress peacefully, we're going to have to do so by speaking to one another. And it doesn't benefit me. In fact, I think it does benefit me to allow for my ideological opponents to speak publicly because I don't believe that their ideas have much merit. And I think that they can be defeated if they are challenged in an open forum. The issue is that oftentimes people start to lean on censorship when they realize that their ideas cannot stand any sort of testing. And I think that's what you're seeing with these anti-Semitism laws that are coming from the GOP. I think that's what you're seeing with the hate speech laws during the 2020 era, where they were trying to, you know, go after anybody that might be racist or bigoted or hateful. This is what you see in the UK. This is now what you see in Australia. By the way, for those that don't understand this story, in Australia, what they were attempting to do was to get Elon Musk not to just censor certain videos. There was videos of a terrorist attack in Australia. Apparently the guy survived, so that's great news. But they wanted to have it suppressed in Australia. And he did that because that was their laws. Elon's position, while being in favor of free speech, he has been willing to essentially go along with the laws of the nation. The issue is that Australia does not find that to be adequate. What they're in fact attempting to get him to do is remove the video from the internet, from his platform entirely. So it's not adequate for him to censor it in Australia at their demand, but rather he has to delete it from his servers entirely and not allow it to be propagated to the rest of the world. Essentially, the Australian government is of the belief that they have the power to dictate what videos the entire world is allowed to see or not to see. Is anybody okay with that? If you've seen what Australia has done to their people over the past 3-4 years, you shouldn't be. You definitely shouldn't be. But just on a principle level, you shouldn't be okay with it either. Okay, so assume you agree with Australia. What if it's the Russians? Ooh, boogeymen. What if it's the Chinese? Ooh, CCP. Oh, what if it's America? Whatever government you think is horrifying. I think they're all horrifying, personal opinion. I don't want any of them to have that power, and I certainly don't want any of them to have the power to threaten Elon Musk, the richest man in human history, with prison if he doesn't go along with their demands. It's ridiculous. It's tyrannical. It has to be fought back against, and I hope that people will. What's really weird to me is that even after the lockdown era, the Australian people still haven't replaced these lunatics. How is this possible? And what it tells me is that the majority, or at least a good chunk of the Australian people, agree with this stuff. Same with the UK. How is this possible? How have you had your mind so warped that you think that censorship is the path forward, that that's the only way you can prevail? It demonstrates fragility. It demonstrates an incapacity to actually defend your own ideas. And I think that that's the biggest concern I have, is that these bad ideas are propagating because they aren't being challenged, because the governments are using censorship to prevent that challenge from occurring. And if that persists, well, then these bad ideas metastasize, which is what we've seen in our college campuses over the past couple of weeks, is that, well, let me repeat for the thousandth time, I do agree with these protesters when it comes to what's happening in Gaza, and that it is bloodshed on a scale that is simply just reprehensible. It really is. That being said, on a foundational basis, I know that these people, by and large, are not my allies. They may want to see these people stop dying, and God bless, I completely agree. But at the end of the day, they will turn around and they will argue that I be censored or that I be imprisoned for my ideological beliefs. So I can't perceive these people to be my allies. They don't believe in free speech. They don't believe in free protests. They're the type of folks that would undoubtedly cheer over the J6, sentencing guidelines and everything that happened with that. I actually maintain a consistent position that free speech and protests for peaceful people should always be allowed. Always. Regardless of your ideological beliefs. And what I've noticed is that many on the right are arguing in favor, unfortunately, of jailing these protesters too, or classifying their speech as being hateful rhetoric. Look, you can, even if you believe it's hateful, some of it is, undoubtedly. Who cares? Who cares? What happened to facts don't care about your feelings, Shapiro? What happened to this? Where did you go? Why am I not seeing any opposition from Conservatism Inc. when it comes to these laws that are being pushed? I got to give credit to Matt Walsh. He's the only one I've seen speak out on this in a forceful way from the Daily Wire crew. It's like, this, if you want to pretend as if you have a consistent ideological framework, you're going to have to defend your enemies from time to time. Now, you don't have to do so vocally. You don't have to go say, these kids, I agree with everything they're saying. Do what I'm doing. Explain the differences, but still defend your core principles. Do you believe that we ought to have a right to freely and peaceably oppose our governments? Because if you don't believe that, well, then you aren't a conservative either. You're certainly not a classical liberal. You're certainly not a libertarian. And you're ultimately not a peaceful person, because the alternative of that pathway is violence. And everybody knows it. So allow these kids to have their little quad sit-ins. Allow them to chant whatever hateful rhetoric they want to, if you think it's hateful. Most of it I don't think is. And then, at the end of it, discuss it. Discuss with them their concerns. Can we actually have some meeting of the minds or agreement on a path forward? Because to me, the obvious answer is, regardless of how you feel about their rhetoric, the truth is that what they're advocating for, which is to not fund this war, is good. They have a bunch of other demands. I totally reject them. But if you can use that particular argument to your benefit, why not? Well, I think the truth is that many in Conservatism Inc., they don't actually believe in America first. They don't believe in ending all of these proxy wars. They don't believe in ending foreign aid, particularly when it comes to one particular nation. That's the reality. They don't. And that's okay. You can have that perspective too. I would love to debate you on it, Shapiro, et cetera, whoever. You can hold that belief, but you can't call yourself America first and have that perspective. Sorry. No, you can't. $35 trillion in debt. $1 trillion plus annually in interest alone. Our financial future for ourselves and our children is in doubt. It is in jeopardy existentially. So if that doesn't qualify as America first to say we shouldn't be funding any of these foreign wars, well, then it doesn't have any meaning at all. So stop saying it. Stop lying to your audience. Stop leading them astray. And the reality is that I think that some of you don't believe in it, that you have globbed onto it in a way to try and basically put wind in your sails that was just trailing off of the Trump train, but you never believed it. And that's crystal clear, which is exactly why you've been going after Tucker Carlson for the past month. Because he actually does believe it. So yeah, stop lying. Tell the truth. You've had any health insurance issues over the past few years? Let's just be honest. We all have, okay? It's absolutely frustrating. It's mind-numbing. It drives me out of my mind. But this is exactly why CrowdHealth was created. For just $175 for an individual or $575 for a family of four or more, you'll get access to a community of people who are willing to help out in the event of an emergency. You'll get access to telemedicine visits, discounted prescriptions, and so much more without doctors' networks getting in the way. And of course, you'll join the crowd, a group of members just like you who want to help pay for each other's unexpected medical events. Let CrowdHealth help with your healthcare needs. Get started today for just $99 per month for your first 3 months by using code LOCKDOWN at joincrowdhealth.com. CrowdHealth is not insurance. Learn more at joincrowdhealth.com. That's joincrowdhealth.com, code LOCKDOWN.
Your conscience or conscience whatsoever. I don't know, whatever Elon Musk is on, it says that that's okay to continue to air that is absolutely disgusting behaviour. And quite frankly, the bloke should be jailed. And the sooner that we can bring rules in or do something about this sort of game playing with our social media, the better off we're going to be. But quite frankly, the power that that man has, because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop.
That was Jackie Lambie, a senator from Australia, or state senator from Australia, I believe. And now let's hear from their prime minister, just to let you know that this is not a one-off, but rather a large movement from the Australian government.
I want to ask you about Elon Musk. He's mocked you this morning for choosing censorship and propaganda over free speech and truth. What's your response to that?
Well, this is a bloke who's chosen ego and showing violence over common sense. I think that Australians will shake their head when they think that this billionaire is prepared to go to court fighting for the right to sow division and to show violent videos, which are very distressing. He is in social media, but he has a social responsibility in order to have that social license. And what has occurred here is that the eSafety Commissioner has made very sensible suggestions. Other social media companies have complied without complaint. But this bloke thinks he's above the Australian law, that he's above common decency. And I tell you what, I say to Elon Musk that he is so out of touch with what the Australian public want. This has been a distressing time. And I find this bloke on the other side of the world from his billionaires' establishments trying to lecture Australians about free speech. Well, I won't cop it, and Australians won't either.
Anthony Albanese, Prime Minister of Australia. I'll take him at his word. I'll take him at his word that this is what the Australian people want. Maybe it is. Maybe the majority do want that. I don't care. You don't get to threaten Americans, which Elon is, over his platform and threaten to jail him if he doesn't remove videos, not just from your nation, but from the entire planet. I reject your demands, and I offer a sincere fuck you. No thanks. But what's really wild to me, he lists off, he says, other social media platforms have done so without complaint. Yeah. Not surprised. Not at all surprised. Which is exactly why, despite all of my concerns about Elon's long-term goals and everything else, I see him as a net interim positive, because this is super important. X has become the one platform, yes, with all of its pitfalls and all of its porn bots and all of its downsides. I understand all of the downsides too, but super important that we have one major social media platform that allows for open dialogue, for allows videos to circulate and go viral that are counter to the demands of tyrannical governments all over the world. That is really, really positive for the future of humanity. So for that reason, that's the primary platform I use. If you want to follow me, it's at Liberty Lockpod on X. Most of you, I'm sure, already do. But man, is that really important. Like, that the truth shall set you free. It shall. And yeah, with the truth and with open, you know, open platforms and free speech, you're going to get a lot of lies too. You're going to get a lot of propagation of hate. And this actually is something I wanted to talk about. I've been wanting to talk about it for a while, so let's go ahead and do it. I'm very concerned about this massive uptick in anti-Semitism that I've seen on X and other platforms, but X primarily, because it does have free speech, or to a large extent, it has free speech. This is a sensitive topic, one that's like, it's hard to walk this line, but I'm going to try and do it anyways, because I think it's really important. I oppose what the IDF is doing in Gaza. I've been very clear on that for fucking months now. I think it's really heartbreaking to witness. We have to have the ability to criticize governments. And that includes your nation state, Israel. We have to be able to. And if we can't, if there's just one nation that we can't critique, well, then you're going to have really bad consequences of that. And apparently there's many in the GOP that want that to be the way forward, that they want there to be free speech except for this one topic. I'm sorry, but that can't be allowed. We have to, like, it's free speech, all or nothing. Here we go. Strap in. You said you wanted it. Here it is. The downside of this is that I am seeing, particularly after you see all of the gruesome footage of the rubble and the kid being pulled out, it's heartbreaking, that I'm seeing real hatred for Jewish people broadly. And I hate that. I think that's a really stupid collectivist analysis of what's transpiring. In fact, let me emphasize this point. In Israel itself, the media there is far less kind to the Israeli leadership than you will see from most American politicians, like the vast majority of American politicians, like 98% of American politicians are much more pro the government of Israel than Israeli publications. I mean, it is crazy. So I think that's actually the way forward, is that you have to separate the people and the religion and any of that stuff from the government itself. Things get done by governments in other people's names that are evil. It happens all the time. You cannot connect these two things. And unfortunately, this is what's being attempted when it comes to these anti-Semitism hate speech laws that are happening in some of these red states and blue states for that matter. But the red states are the hypocrites, so that's what I focus on. When you do that, it's going to sow additional conspiracy theorizing, and it's going to sow more bigotry, racism, all these things that you are alleging that you're fighting. But it has the exact opposite effect. That if I am told that I can't talk about something or someone, I'm probably going to want to more. And if I'm threatened with imprisonment over it, well then, yeah, I'm really going to start to look into that deeply. It's Streisand effect, right? Like, that's essentially what happens with these laws. I think it's totally counterproductive. I think it ultimately will increase anti-Semitism all over the planet. And that's not good. I don't want that either. But I also don't want to be so afraid of getting called these stupid labels that I don't speak out on behalf of the innocent people in Gaza, which there are hundreds of thousands. Like, there's no way you can say that there's not hundreds of thousands. In fact, during my debate with Mark Pellegrino, he said that right now, now I'll take him at his word. I don't know if this is true. He said right now, Hamas has 70-something% approval rating. And I responded to him. I said, okay, but there's millions of people there, right? So assume your percentages are correct. That means that at least 500,000 people that are currently in Gaza do not support Hamas. Over 500,000 people, innocent people that oppose that organization, their alleged scare quotes government. Are they also guilty? And he said, well, not really, but how can you possibly differentiate? And this is ultimately why I'm so anti-war, is that it's very hard because we don't have, you know, discriminate bombs. You can't drop a bomb on a building and say, take out, you know, these Hamas guys, but leave all these innocent babies alive. Like, that's not how munitions work. So it means that you're condemning over 500,000 innocent people, even by this stupid percentage of this poll, which I have no idea how accurate it is. But that's what happens with collective guilt. This is exactly why we spiraled into this absurd, rehashing of a debate of whether or not the nuclear bombing of Hiroshima and Nagasaki were moral. It's like, well, the only way you can believe it's moral is to believe that eviscerating innocent women and children and men is acceptable. And if you reject that, well, then you have to say it's immoral. Now, you can say it's tactically intelligent. You can say that ultimately it would have cost more lives, so therefore it was better than the alternative. It was a necessary evil. Argue that all day. We can have that discussion. But if you ever find yourself in a position of arguing that nuclear evisceration of hundreds of thousands of innocent people is morally good, well, then I think you've completely lost the plot. And that's what I've witnessed across Conservatism Inc. over the past few months, or I guess it was a couple weeks. Bizarre, and very, very against my estimation of what Christianity espouses. I find it very hard to believe that that would be what Jesus would preach. That, yes, well, you know, Hirohito, such a bad guy, hundreds of thousands of, you know, women and babies, kids, they had to go to. And it was morally good. I reject that. I do. I reject it. I think it's just not a healthy perspective. It ultimately excuses away like real moral atrocity, and it ultimately leads us down a path of justifying war crimes, which will eventually, I don't think it'll happen anytime soon, but eventually be used against you. Like if use this logic and extrapolate it forward. Well, if it's okay for the US to do that, why is it not okay for the Russians to do that? Because if Russia were to try and land invade America, they would lose countless of their soldiers. So from their perspective, in order to diminish their loss of soldiers, they'd be morally right, because that's paramount. That takes ultimate primacy, that the survival of your people is so much more significant than it is the enemy combatants, even the civilians, that you can justify anything. You can justify any atrocity. Okay. Well, so Russia now has, they have hypersonic missiles, and they have an air defense system that stops our nuclear arsenal entirely. Dead in its tracks. Well, from their perspective, particularly given the proxy war that's happening on their border, they would have full moral right from your psychotic worldview to just launch their entire arsenal at America while they have that brief advantage in the mutually assured destruction, you know, race. Would that be moral? No, it wouldn't. So now you would get into the argument of like, well, it's because our side is good and their side is bad. But that's the thing. That's their perspective too. They believe that their side is good and our side is bad. So they can use the exact same logic to eviscerate you and your loved ones and your children. Why would you want that to be the way of the world? Might makes right purely. That's the end of it, right? We have to have more morality than that. And if we can't, then we don't deserve to prevail, because we aren't the good guys. Okay? If you start to eviscerate hundreds of thousands of innocent people, you aren't the good guys. And for those that will now extrapolate and go, well, you don't have much to say about Dresden. You don't have much to say about the firebombing of Tokyo. Yeah, actually, I do. It was immoral as fuck, too. It was absolutely crazy. It's not even hard to say that. You could still argue it's a necessary evil. I'll permit that. Do not try and argue it's a moral good. That's fucking crazy talk. Children, for God's sakes. How can you still attribute blame because their leadership was evil? Okay, what are you doing? How have you gotten so twisted? But this has been the pervasive neoconservative argumentation for decades now. And it was on life support. It was just like, beep, beep, Yeah, like the heartbeat was, the gap was so vast. It was almost gone. And it's back. Why? Sorry, I'm whining. It just really frustrates me, man. I really thought that we were winning this, and now it's just like, but you know what? I'm going to spin this positively. I think this is the last gasp. I really do. Because it's not landing on you know, positive reactions from their audience. I'm seeing a lot of it. I can't tell you how many people I've seen, you know, tweeting out, I'm canceling my subscription to Daily Wire. This is too far. This is crazy. What are we doing? I thought we were America first. What are we doing? We're arguing in favor of war crimes now. What are we doing? And it's like, yeah, thank you. Now, again, I'm not even rooting for their downfall. I want there to be as many, you know, different dissident platforms that exist, and I want them to be profitable and successful, and I want them to reach millions of people. I think that's good. That's healthy. I am not rooting for the downfall of Daily Wire. But what I am rooting for is for them to feel the pushback when they get some, you know, neoconservative talking points that they try and push again, and they go, their audience goes, we're done with this, dude. We've been done with this. The global war on terror was such a disaster. We're not going back. Okay? We're done. We ain't doing it. We're not fighting wars for Vladimir Zelensky, and we ain't fighting them for Netanyahu either. No thanks. I saw the fallout. I saw the global war on terror. I saw the consequences. 20 years. What did we get for it? Death, destruction, financial destitution. Nothing positive. Nothing positive. So no, we ain't doing it again. So yeah, let them know. And if they realize that what they're espousing is crazy, give them your money again. Go back to them. Let the market speak for itself. I think that's the way forward. I think that's the healthy process. Today's episode is brought to you by Phoenix Ammunition. Phoenix Ammunition is the best motherfucking ammunition company on the planet. So good, in fact, I can't even run this ad on my YouTube channel. I can only run it on audio and Rumble because you can't advertise ammunition companies on YouTube. Can you fucking believe it? This is America, isn't it? Guess not. But if you're an American and you want to work with an American company, work with the best. If you're running low, only place to go, phoenixammo.com. They are absolute savages. They've got a great Twitter handle. If you're on X, go to @phoenixammo. Make sure you follow them. Let them know that you heard about their company from me. And yeah, anytime you actually need ammunition, seriously, it's like, it's the only option. phoenixammo.com. Get you some. Here's what a British veteran said about Dresden. Just so you know, it's not just my opinion on this.
How was it? It was evil. I don't really know what you expect me to say when you say how was it. Thousands of firebombs dropping all over the place, explosions, heat, fire. People screaming, people burning, people alight. Well, it wasn't. After about half an hour, it started developing into something which was really bad. And so you go out and you come out of there and the whole place is a furnace. It's a furnace. Because we were in the centre of Dresden. It dehumanises anything that you've experienced before. I've been through 6 years of war. I've lost all but three of the 28 blokes I joined up with in 1937. I've been in every battle in the Middle East. I've been in Italy, I'd come home, I'd been captured at Arnhem. But nothing prepared me for seeing women and children alight and flying through the air. Nothing prepared me for that.
And that's the true nature of war. That's what the veterans of war actually will tell you. And I know this because I've spoken to them. Like, most of them won't talk about it because it was so horrifying. But those that will, very rarely will they spin it as a positive. Very rarely will they say, it was great. It was so fun. It was such a good thing. It was morally just perfect. No. They'll tell you that it was horrifying. And completely dehumanizing, and ultimately shattered them and changed their perspective on humanity and what it is to be a human being forever. That's what war is. This is why you ought to oppose war, okay? And I think that the whole reason that you're seeing this push to justify atrocities like Hiroshima and Nagasaki is that there is, unfortunately, an increasing likelihood of the use of nuclear weapons again. And that is the one thing we cannot have happen. I've said it 1,000 times. I'll say it again. You have to avoid nuclear war. Why am I the weird person for saying that? Why am I the anomaly? Why is this not like a given to everybody? No, you can't use them. Okay? You can't. No matter how existential your fight and all that. No, it doesn't make you the good guy. No, it's not okay. And just like take to heart what the military veterans say about this stuff. I'm not even, that video wasn't even talking about Hiroshima and Nagasaki. That was Dresden. This was, you know, allegedly conventional warfare as opposed to nuclear. It's like, that's also fucking crazy. I mean, at the root, that this is why I'm so anti-war, is that civilians get caught up in it. That it's almost always just a dick measuring contest between tyrants. I don't want to participate. And that's like the one thing that I don't really have a choice. If there's an invasion, I'm just stuck. And if there's not an invasion, I'm still robbed to fund it. And it's like, that's the thing I want to see stop. This is why I'm so upset with the new speaker, Mike Johnson, is that he ran on this America First mantra of being a hardline constitutional conservative. And now he's authorizing a reauthorization of FISA, which is warrantless spying on the American people. He's authorizing billions more to not just Ukraine, not just Israel, but also to Taiwan, the one that's probably the most cataclysmic potential war out there. And also not a war that's happening, I might add. But no, we're already arming the next proxy war. Like, really think, like, let that seep in. They're not even at war. We're already arming them. And just for the record, that's exactly what happened in Ukraine. Did it prevent the invasion? No, it didn't. It catalyzed it. So do we want to take the exact same game plan and let it play out again? Well, the answer clearly should be no. No, we should not be funding Taiwan and giving them munitions and arming them up so that, oh, well, that'll deter the CCP from moving on them. Did it deter? Did it dissuade Putin? No. How many hundreds of thousands of fucking innocent people have to perish with this stupid-ass game plan before you actually go back to the drawing board and you say, maybe this isn't the best idea. Maybe? Do you ever reflect? What, must we have World War III and go bankrupt simultaneously before you'll reflect on it? Or is that your game plan? Because I'm starting to think it's the latter.
If we don't bring order to this chaos, it could escalate. I mean, clearly, by some estimates, there was a Fox News report a couple of days ago, maybe 200 campuses have some form of this. Columbia stands out because it's one of the great institutions. It has a revered history there, and they're trampling all over it. This is not the expression of free speech. It's not the free exchange of ideas in the public square. This is threatening and intimidating Jewish students because of who they are, because of what they believe. We met with a big group of Jewish students before we went to the campus, and they're hiding in fear. They don't go to class. They're afraid they're going to be assaulted. It's not fair to them. Some of them had to bring federal lawsuits, civil rights violations that are being committed there. And taxpayer dollars should not be going to institutions that are engaging in this kind of nonsense. If you're an administrator on a university campus, your number one job, the first and most obvious, is the safety and security of your students.
There's Mike Johnson, you know, the bastion of conservatism, arguing, I guess, on cracking down on the protests because they're intimidating. Look, I'm sure there are aspects of these protests that are intimidating. As best I've seen, there hasn't been much violence, hardly any at all. The only violence I've really seen is when the cops or the Texas patrol came in and started to oust them. But setting that aside, I'm sure it's disconcerting to some of the Jewish students, undoubtedly. I'm sure they don't enjoy it. But this like the real principled position, I from a conservative perspective, I would think, would be that regardless of what Columbia University or any of these colleges are doing in response to these protests, you should not dangle federal funding to these institutions unless they crack down on these protests. You ought to be removing federal funding regardless. These are the indoctrination mills for your ideological enemies. Okay? I don't know if you, like, have you caught on yet? You have millions of college students that are coming out, graduating every single year, that genuinely believe in Marxism. That isn't enough for you to say we ought to be defunding these institutions? No, 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 no. Suddenly it's an issue. Now we have to withhold the funding if they don't prevent these protests from occurring. It's an absurdity. The answer ought to be we shouldn't have ever been funding these institutions. I should have never, ever been robbed to fund Columbia University as they just churn out the most dangerous psychotic individuals that go into the highest levels of power, might I add. And on top of that, most of them get grants or subsidized student loans, which also I'm on the hook for somehow. And now you have Biden who's offering to just forgive these student loans. Oh, well, they're forgiven. So they just poof, gone. No, I'm going to pay for them. You and I are going to be robbed to pay for the education, scare quotes, but the indoctrination of the most dangerous group of people in this country, overt Marxists. You good with that, Mr. Conservative? No, no, no. But if they just crack down on these protests and they go back to teaching Marxism to your kids, we can continue to fund them. That's your answer, King of Conservatism. What a fucking joke. What an absolute joke. The answer ought to be you withdraw, cease all funding to any of these college establishments, any of them. And then that's it. That's the answer. You stop doing that. You stop funding your enemies as they propagandize your children. If you're not already intelligent enough not to be sending your kids to these institutions, which, hey, that's great, but it doesn't change the fact that you're being robbed to fund it. You're being robbed to pay the tuition or the salaries and the tuitions of these overt Marxists. You good with that, Mike Johnson? You fraud, you. You absolute fraud. And might I add, Trump deserves some shade here. Trump has allegedly, I'll say allegedly, been responsible for greenlighting the entire aid package that went down last week. That it was his efforts, according to Lindsey Graham and to Mike Johnson and a whole bunch of other politicians, that have all given him credit for getting it over the finish line. America first, Don? What? Say it ain't so. Say it ain't so. And let me just say, if that's true, which I think it is, but if it is true, what it tells me is that homeboy is feeling the heat, that he needs donor capital to try and get him over the finish line and to keep his ass out of prison, and he's going to sell out. He's going to do what's necessary to get that done. I hope I'm wrong, by the way. I really do. But I don't think I am. I think that the pressure has been too much for him, and he broke. That's my honest assessment. I know it's going to piss off a lot of you. I don't care. I'm telling you the truth. I think that he is really concerned he's going to prison for the rest of his life. And he's like, if I don't get into the White House again, I'm going away long, like for a very long time. And I ain't got much time left, and I ain't doing that. So we'll see if I'm right or if I'm right. But I think I'm right.
Well, what's anti-Semitic is that Hamas endorsed this protest today. Within the last 2 hours, they issued an endorsement statement and heralded the students here and said, this is the next generation of leadership in America. If you're getting endorsed by Hamas, that's not a good look. It's not a good sign. Some of these students apparently are unaware of the atrocities of October 7th, or they're denying it. They deny that women and children were brutally raped and murdered, that infants were placed.
So with that video, he also tweeted out, this is not who we are. And I think this is the mistake. The mistake is in the set. Well, first off, I think he's right. You don't want to be participating in a protest that's endorsed by Hamas. Probably not an ideal endorsement, nor is it the best look. However, what he says is, this is not who we are. Wrong. You're wrong. This is who America is. And until you're actually willing to look it in its face, you're not going to progress. You're not going to actually prevail. Like, what you're seeing is a product of decades of complete monopolization of public education. That you are teaching the next generation that there is like critical theory, that you have this oppressor versus the oppressed class, and that anything that you do to topple the oppressor, no matter how horrific it may be, is ultimately moral and just. Who does that sound like? Sounds a little bit like Shapiro talking about dropping the nukes on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. Anyway, setting that aside, it doesn't benefit you at all to pretend as if these kids don't exist. That if for instance, you get your wish and they criminalize their speech and they throw them in prison, they throw away the key, they crack down on these protests, they make them all dissipate. Do the kids go away? Do the ideas get deleted from their minds? No, obviously not. These ideas persist. They will propagate. And worse, they will be radicalized way, way more. They will be convinced because of their critical theory perspective that they are standing up for the oppressed over the oppressor. And now you use the state to crack down on them, convincing them, probably irreparably, that in fact everything that they're espousing is true, 100%. That they are standing up for the oppressed, and here comes the oppressor, and now I'm the oppressed too. Now I'm standing in, you know, in unison with my comrades. You think it's going to fix it? Do you think that alleviates, or does it turn down the temperature? Does it diminish anti-Semitism? The answer to all of these things is no. It doesn't do anything positive. It doesn't help your cause one iota. So this pathway is actually exactly how you make things worse. You have to allow for these protests. Like, what would be more beautiful than to actually use college for what it was once meant for, at least once upon a time, to allow for these kids to actually hash out their beliefs in public? Put on a debate series. Have Finkelstein debate against Shapiro. Just like bring in all of the most, you know, prominent, ardent, outspoken people on both sides of this divide and let them hash it out. Let them actually see the arguments on both sides. You don't benefit your cause by suppressing your opposition. That goes both ways. It does not benefit you to just suppress them. You must challenge the ideas. Are all of these people going to be reached? Certainly not. Can you reach some of them? Of course. And you need to, because that is actually who we are. A bunch of radical Che Guevara t-shirt wearing granola eating hippies that ultimately believe in critical theory and they believe in communism deeply. And you don't make that go away by closing your eyes. And you don't make it go away by throwing them in prison or having cops come in with batons. That's not how you prevail in this fight. And if you continue on this path, it will only be exacerbated. That's the truth. This is Representative Nicole Malliotakis, GOP from New York.
There is anti-Semitism taking place on this college campus. That is very different from free speech. And that is what we're calling for this president to resign, because she's not addressing it. She's not taking control of the campus or making her students feel safe or keeping them safe. They have to go to virtual learning because she cannot protect them. And that is a massive problem that we have, not just at Columbia, but at other universities as well.
If you're going to make the argument that anti-Semitism isn't free speech, well, then racism isn't either, right? Transphobia, bigotry, all the exact same arguments that the left has been making ever since the Black Lives Matter movement, and actually long prior to that, you're agreeing with them. You're saying that there are certain categories of humanity that ultimately cannot deal with having any sort of criticism levied towards them. That's not free speech. If you believe that, you have imbibed of critical theory. You ultimately believe that there are certain groups of people that have to be protected above all else. That's not equity. That's not classical liberalism. That's not free speech. None of it. You're a fraud. Just drop the pretense that you actually believe in the First Amendment. You don't. Now, I'll say this. Some of these college presidents ought to resign. They probably should have resigned a long time ago. And if it's true that these protests get so unruly that you genuinely can't go to class, well then, yeah, I think you have every right as a college administrator to call the cops or do whatever you have to do to try and stop the violence, if it's actually violent. But what I've seen is not that. I mean, they find, you know, one 10-second video that looks like things are totally out of control, but you actually look at the other videos and it's like, it just looks like a bunch of hippies, dude. Looks like a bunch of hippies that unfortunately are also communists that genuinely want to see that war end. And I agree with them on that. So let's just let that play out. Let's see if we can just not fund it, because that would actually help, you know, end this war. And it would actually help end all of the proxy wars that we're in right now. Kind of a silver bullet to ending all of the proxy wars would be to not be funding the proxy wars. I know. Crazy thought. I'll get you out of here on this. Konstantin Kissin, who's become a very viral, you know, I guess, talking head over the past couple of years. And I like a lot of what he has to say. I think he's a very gifted orator, for the record. No ill will on my part, but I just thought that this was a really bad straw man of the opposition that we're seeing right now. So I wanted to run that for you.
How do we combat the kind of hate that is being seen sometimes for the first time in Western civilizations now?
You can't. If you import people who hate Jews, you're going to have people who hate Jews. Am I wrong? So if that's what you're doing, then that's what will happen. You can't fight it. What people keep saying, oh, the rise in anti— there's no rise in anti-Semitism. There's no rise in anti-Semitism. You just found out that you had lots of anti-Semitic people in your society who've been anti-Semitic this entire time. There's no rise.
There's no rise, Mr. Kissin. Okay. Look, you want to argue that importing people who ultimately are anti-Semitic increases the amount of people in America that— or I guess he's talking in the UK, in the UK, that are ultimately anti-Semitic. Sure, undoubtedly that's true. But to argue that there hasn't been an increase because of what's happening in Gaza is crazy. It's just crazy. And it's obviously wrong. You can't have tens of thousands of innocent people, particularly with the you know, the viral nature of the internet media landscape now, and expect that to not have any consequences. That there aren't any people that prior to this war beginning had literally nothing negative to say about Israel, and now they're going, I don't like what I'm seeing here. This seems a little over the top. Like, these are very reasonable reactions to have when you see kids being pulled out of rubble. And it applies across all wars as far as I'm concerned, not just this one. But that's a very reasonable, humane reaction to seeing videos of that nature. And if you're going to strawman their opposition to that and say, well, now that's an uptick in anti-Semitism. And guess what? It's not actually just an uptick. It's just a realization that these people have been anti-Semitic all along. That's a lie, actually. And it doesn't do the Jewish people, or Israel for that matter, any good to pretend as if that's what's happening. Is that all of these secret anti-Semites have been lurking behind every corner, and now they just finally feel emboldened to come out and say it. It's like, look, there's some of that. Of course there's some of that. But there's also a lot of just normal people that go, I don't like seeing this. What the fuck is this? Can we not be a participant in it at a minimum? Can we not do that? And you go, I knew it. I knew you were just waiting to show your true colors. I mean, this is really a pathology. Like, if that's your perception, it's pathological that you think that it's just like simmering beneath the surface, waiting to come up all the time. Like, that's not true. I genuinely don't believe that's true, because I know a lot of people that prior to this war were like, Israel's awesome. And now they're watching these videos and they're like, I don't know if Israel's so awesome, or at least the IDF. I mean, can we have any nuance? And I think this is the broader point I wanted to make, is that, you know, there's this tendency, like, it's much easier to go viral if you say certain things, or if you say really anything with a level of 100% certainty and, you know, condemnation. And it's just not reality. Like, it will help you go viral. It'll make your statement more impactful, but it's also not true. And I think that it undermines your cause if you have one. Now, I don't know if he does. I think he probably does. I don't know for sure. But I think that if you overstate your claims, it ultimately, for a more astute audience, they're going to realize, oh, you're basically a propagandist at this point. Like, you're not being even-handed. You're not being actually honest. And I don't think that that's a benefit to your cause, whatever it may be. So this is why, you know, maybe it'll limit my reach. Maybe it, because it's not so bombastic and definitive, I won't have the same impact that a Konstantin Kissin might have. But I'm okay with that, because I'm going to maintain the path of telling the truth. And truth has nuance in it. It is not so cut and dry. It is not so black and white. There is actual areas of disagreement and sincere disagreement on both sides, sincere grievances on both sides. And it doesn't benefit either side to pretend as if there aren't legitimate grievances on both sides. So that's all I wanted to say. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. Sorry I took a week off. I've been traveling a ton and I just was totally gassed, but I am back and I don't have any travel for the next 3 weeks. So I will be getting out way more episodes. And yeah, that's about it. Make sure you share the show around if you could. Make sure you hit the like button. Leave a comment down below if I said anything you hated. I'll try and engage with any constructive criticism. It has to be constructive. Can't just be an insult, because then I don't want to engage with you, because then you're just an asshole. I don't want to do that. Yeah. And subscribe. That's about it. Love you guys. Peace.